quitting. But eventually things straightened themselves out. The malcontents quit, and the jerks got fired. Everyone else mellowed. The show has that effect on people. It's such a great job, it's hard to be bitter. And I loved working one day a week. I moved to New York City 12 years ago, but I still fly to L.A. every Wednesday, put in a day's work at The Simpsons, and then get the hell out of town. And then a project came along that sucked me back full-time. The Simpsons Movie. In 1992, we screened Rough Animation, the animatic, of Camp Krusty for James L. Brooks. Jim got very excited. This is it. This could be the Simpsons movie, man. You just need to stretch it a little. A movie? Camp Krusty was barely an episode. At 17 minutes long, it was several minutes too short to air. The song Hail to Thee, Camp Krusty was added later, just to reach minimum length. But the idea of doing a Simpsons movie kept coming up over the next decade. The producers always fought it. Why would anyone pay to see a show they get for free on TV every day? And what could we show people they hadn't seen already? The answer? Bart's wiener. But I'm getting ahead of myself. One day, 15 years into the series, Fox showed us market research that said people wanted a Simpsons movie more than anything else, more than another Harry Potter, more than another Star Wars. So we sat down for a writers' meeting to discuss the movie we'd been avoiding for a dozen years. We cracked the plot in 3 hours. The whole movie came out of that meeting. Homer gets a pig, Springfield gets polluted by pig crap, the government puts Springfield under a dome, the Simpsons flee to Alaska. It was that easy. At the end of the meeting, Matt Groening said, "Remember, all of this is a secret." I thought he meant the plot of the movie. A few weeks later, I was speaking at a college in Oklahoma. A student asked if we were ever going to do a Simpsons movie. "Yes, we are," I said coyly, "but I can't tell you the plot. That's a secret." That night, I was in my hotel room watching CNN. A crawl went by at the bottom. Mike Reiss announces Simpsons movie. That's when I realized the plot wasn't a secret. The whole damn movie was. When I went back to work the next day, everyone at Fox was mad at me. A whole multinational corporation wanted to kill me. Matt Groening's first words to me were, "Well, you just had to tell everybody." The studio had planned an elaborate teaser campaign to promote the film. For 2 years, you were going to see cryptic yellow billboards with the message, "It's coming." Instead, I had blown the secret at Oklahoma State University. It is a tribute to the kindness of Matt Groening and Jim Brooks that I didn't lose my job. That incident should have gotten me fired. Instead, this book will get me fired. Jim and Matt assembled an amazing staff to write the movie. Two of our most prolific writers, John Swartzwelder and John Vitti. One of our most esteemed, George Meyer. And 4 guys who had run the show in the past. Mike Scully, David Merkin, Al Jean, and me. It was the most focused, talented room full of writers I'd ever worked with. We started work every morning at 10 a.m. sharp, no stragglers. And everyone concentrated on the job. The writers never went off on time-wasting tangents, no matter how hard I pushed them. We worked out the film's story scene by scene, then divided it into 7 sections. Each of us went home to write 1 20-page chunk. We met up again 2 weeks later to lash together this 140-page Frankenstein of a script. To everyone's amazement, it read well. The movie worked. We got together as a group, polishing the script. I thought we had something perfect by our 5th draft. What you saw in theaters was our 166th draft. It turns out to be a rule of filmmaking that you never stop working until you run out of time. Almost every day we'd produce a new draft and shred 100 copies of the old one. To write a film with an environmental message, we must have killed every tree in British Columbia. And yet for all that hard work, what's the only thing anyone remembers from the Simpsons movie? Spider Pig, Spider Pig, does whatever a Spider Pig does. That's the kind of joke you write when you're high. And we did. As simple and dumb as it sounds, somehow it caught the public's fancy. It even became the number one ringtone in France. Spider cochon, spider cochon. I wrote another song for the film, a rousing tribute to the state of Alaska. I got the job because I was the only one on staff who'd actually been to Alaska. I hated the place. The people were surly, and the mosquitoes were enormous. And vice versa. Here's my Alaska song, available to the public for the first time. Homer begins. New Englanders are snobby twerps, and Southerners are lazy. Midwesterners are toothless jerks. The whole West Coast is crazy. Delaware, you're well aware, is sucky as Kentucky. And Bart goes, Homer, the song? And Homer goes, there is no state so great in the lower 48 as Alaska. As Alaska. You can cruise, drink brews, and even meet some Jews in Alaska. And a Jewish couple named the Icebergs goes, in Alaska. We can make our home in Fairbanks or Nome. It sure beats being trapped in a dome. And the kids go, Homer, we are friggin' bored. Duly noted and ignored. I spell it A-L-A-S-S-K-A-H, well, more or less. This is the land I love the best, Oklahoma. I mean Alaska. That song got cut from the movie. But then a lot of stuff got cut. The real Aaron Brockovich recorded a guest voice. And we'd written cameos for Al Gore, Sean Penn, Russell Crowe, and the cast of The View. None of that is in the final film. One of my favorite jokes got changed. I think it was George Meyer's line. Bart has been arrested for skateboarding naked at Homer's goading. Homer shows up to get him and brings only a shirt. You didn't bring my pants, Bart cries. Homer replies, who am I, Bill Blass? I love the joke because it shows how blissfully out of touch Homer is. It's like when he guessed that Bart's favorite movie star was Steve McQueen. Years later, I was watching The Simpsons movie on an airplane. It was showing on a little monitor mounted on an inch-wide stalk. They got to my favorite line where Bart demands Homer give him pants. Homer replies, who am I, Tommy Bahama? Tommy Bahama? It may be a better joke, certainly it's hipper, but I miss Bill Blass. I didn't realize how angry I was till my wife caught me strangling the stalk that the monitor was on. Here's my best contribution to the Simpsons movie. It's a sight gag. As the giant dome is being lowered over Springfield, it looks like the end of the world. Some people run out of a bar and into a church. Others run out of a church into a bar. All right, it doesn't read funny, but many people say it's their favorite thing in the movie, after that stupid spider pig. Film critic David Edelstein called it a joke so rich in meaning you could write a master's thesis on it. And you know how funny master's theses are. One day I met Gary Trudeau, creator of Doonesbury, one of my comedy heroes. He mentioned how much he loved that joke. I wrote that, I said. Trudeau looked at me with great respect. That is the greatest 3 seconds in comedy history, he said. That's what my wife called our wedding night, I cracked. And suddenly he lost all respect for me. The Simpsons movie came out in 2007 and became the second most successful 2D animated film in history after The Lion King. Up yours, Simba. The critics were happy, and more amazingly, the fans were happy. And we all agreed, let's never ever do that again. But just as couples have a second baby once they forget what a miserable time suck the first one was, I'm sure we'll make another Simpsons movie. And then another one. And then another one. I think we'll keep making Simpsons movies until we make a really rotten one. And then we'll make two more. You know, like Shrek. My pitch, not that anyone asked, is to make the next Simpsons movie live action. For example, we've looked all over to find an actor as bald as Homer Simpson and just as stupid. And then God gave us Vin Diesel. For Flanders, I recommend Fargo's William H. Macy. In fact, one of our writers met Macy at a party. When he heard my friend work for The Simpsons, Macy apparently said, "If one more goddamn person tells me I should play Ned Flanders, I'm gonna strangle him." William H. Macy, check. And Tom Cruise would be surprisingly good as Smithers. Not that I'm calling Tom gay. The Trailer You Never Saw. I wrote this song as a trailer for The Simpsons movie. It was never used. God damn it. The song is called "Why Is Every Movie a TV Show?" Homer leaves Springfield's Aztec Theater. He passes posters for several movies based on TV shows. And Homer sings, "Why is every movie a TV show? How the hell can they charge me $8? I like it at home when it's a free show, but when I have to pay for it, it sucks, sucks, sucks." And Mr. Burns says, "Why make motion pictures from the boob tube? Not a bloody one of them is good. Why'd they make a talkie out of F Troop?" They didn't, sir. "Well, they should. I'll make some calls." Comic book guy stands in Star Trek garb. "I saw Star Trek 1-8, and everyone was great, except Star Trek 5, The Final Frontier, directed by Mr. William Shatner, which was the worst Star Trek movie ever." Comic book guy steps into the street and joins an angry mob wielding pipes, boards with nails in it, etc. Homer leads the pack. "Let's kill all the Hollywood producers before they make another Scooby-Doo. 'Cause TV shows become such rotten movies." Marge says, "I like The Fugitive." Homer, "Me too." The mob transforms into a festive marching band, still led by Homer. They have colorful banners for The Fugitive. "The Fugitive, The Fugitive. It was an Oscar-winning hit. Remember when that man jumped right off the dam? Remember when..." Well, that was about it. The parade suddenly loses steam. The band music dies out sourly. And Lisa says, "Movies were once turned into TV shows. That gave us the classic series MASH." Our barbershop quartet, the B-Sharps, appears. "But when a TV show becomes a movie, you get Flintstones, you get Dragnet, you get trash." Big rousing finish. Homer says, "You get a disgrace like Lost in Space. How long till they give us Will and Grace?" Crowd joins in. "You get miscast, mishmash, flashy, rehash, trash." They hold a big pose. Wide in the sea, they are being filmed by a camera crew, and the director says, "Cut, print, that's a wrap." And the announcer says, "The Simpsons movie, coming soon." The Tag. The last minute or two of The Simpsons, after our final commercial break, is known as The Tag. In other words, an unsightly object that can and should be removed. The show went 20 years without having a tag before Fox decided we needed one. Anything goes in The Simpsons tag. Sometimes we wrap up a dangling plot thread. Sometimes it's a complete non sequitur. A few times it's even been a scene cut from the middle of the show. It wasn't good enough for Act 2, but it's good enough for Act 4. Some tags are truly inspired. Some are just crap to fill things out. You can decide which this one is. Chapter 19. It Never Ends. 5 years ago, The Simpsons released its first mobile game. We titled it The Simpsons Tapped Out, a double entendre. The game involves tapping, but also ponders whether the show was losing creative steam. But the game went on to become the most downloaded app in the country. That same year, we were nominated for an Oscar for our Maggie Simpson animated short, The Longest Daycare. And we made TV history three times in the year 2016. We opened one episode with a virtual reality couch gag, a four-minute immersive trip to the planet of the couches. We closed another show with something that had never been attempted, improv animation. Homer, voiced by Dan Castellaneta, took questions live on the air, which we animated in real time. Finally, we took a stab at topical humor, speed animating the Trump short 3 a.m. for YouTube. It got 12 million views. The Simpsons is a really old dog with some really new tricks. We're about to start our 30th season, the longest running series in primetime history, by a decade. Gunsmoke lasted 20 years, Lassie did 19, Ozzie and Harriet went 14 seasons. It's a little embarrassing what boring shows we're competing with. We're still one of Fox's top-rated series. We're a hit in 71 countries. There's a new Simpsons movie in the works. It's always in the works. So we're not tapped out just yet. We've survived five U.S. presidents, two of them Bushes. We've endured the passing of two beloved cast members, Marsha Wallace and Phil Hartman, and four terrific writers, Sam Simon, Kevin Curran, Don Payne, and Sandy Frank. Simpsons writer Brian Kelly remarked, "These things are bound to happen when a show's been on infinite years." Even if the day comes that Fox cancels us, there's the inevitable pickup by Netflix, followed by cancellation on Netflix, then brief runs on Hulu, Crackle, CISO, Bum Bum, Tudor. Now I'm just making words up. And then there will be Simpsons reboots and spinoffs, and some awful Broadway musical. As we stated in a catchy, stupid spoof of Billy Joel's catchy, stupid song, "We Didn't Start the Fire," "They'll never stop the Simpsons. Have no fears. We've got stories for years, like Marge becomes a robot. Maybe Moe gets a cell phone. Has Bart ever owned a bear?" Why does the show endure? Because it's based on two fundamental principles, family and folly. Family is eternal. Even if Billy has two daddies or three mommies, family never changes. It's a bunch of people stuck in one house who love each other while driving each other crazy. As for folly, it's forever changing. Human beings are always coming up with new ways to be idiots. The newspapers are full of fresh ideas for our show. Bad parenting trends for Marge, useless curriculum changes for Principal Skinner, new weapons for Chief Wiggum, oh boy, bogus but expensive medical breakthroughs for Dr. Hibbert, and innovative ways for Mayor Quimby to be corrupt and Mr. Burns to be greedy. And there will always be fresh reasons for the good people of Springfield to form an ugly mob. When will The Simpsons end? The day people all over the world start treating each other with love, respect, and intelligence. I hope that day never comes. Judd Apatow on The Simpsons' longevity. Simpsons viewership may be down from what it once was, but viewership for everything is down. Viewership for the NFL is down. I think The Simpsons is still so strong. You can debate seasons and episodes, but it's as funny as anything being made right now. I remember 6 or 7 years ago people were saying, "This might be the last year." And then suddenly there was a moment when the world decided, "No, we're never getting rid of this." The final burning question. Why are The Simpsons yellow? I love doing Simpsons Q&A because, unlike in any class I've ever taken, I've done the work and I know the answers. But at a lecture in 2009, a 6-year-old boy asked me, "Why are The Simpsons yellow?" Not only didn't I have the answer, I'd never even thought to ask the question. I went back to work and asked the other writers. They had no idea. I finally found the answer in a candle shop in Burbank. It was hosting an art opening for a Hungarian woman who used to work for our animation house, Klosky Csupo. She was the one who received Matt Groening's original line drawings and was told to give them color. She made Marge's dress green, her hair blue, and her pearls red. Red pearls! Where do those come from? There were some missteps. In early seasons, Asians were depicted with pale white skin and pink hair. But why are the Simpsons yellow? Because Bart, Lisa, and Maggie have no hairlines. There's no line that separates their skin from their hair points. So the animators chose yellow. It's kinda skin, it's kinda hair. This doesn't explain why the Minions, SpongeBob, and Tweety Pie are all yellow. But let them write their own goddamn book. Glossary. What follows is a list of actual terms used by comedy writers. Just as language manuals use the simplest sentences, the pen is on the table, really? I've chosen to illustrate these terms with the simplest, most obvious gags that exist. Kim Kardashian jokes. The first term is K-words. Neil Simon's The Sunshine Boys exposed audiences to one of the great secrets of comedy. Words with K sounds are funny. Cucumbers are funnier than celery. Cucamonga is funnier than Philadelphia. And Kim Kardashian is funnier than anything. A warning to novices, K-words alone don't make a sentence funny. For example, my cousin Kenny was killed by the Ku Klux Klan. Not hilarious. Rule of three. This is one of the few solid rules of comedy, one vouched for by scientist slash Futurama co-creator David Cohen. The rule of three is a list joke, where the first two elements are normal and the third element is a surprise. For example, man says, I picked up three things at the Kim Kardashian Museum, a brochure, a t-shirt, and chlamydia. Button. The last joke in a scene is the button, buttoning it with a laugh before you move on to the next scene. For example, she says, it's agreed, we're going to a museum today. Which one would you like? And he says, the Kim Kardashian Museum. It's always open and anyone can get in. Act break. This is the moment on a TV show right before the commercial break that is so intriguing you have to stay tuned. Commercial-free sitcoms, like those on HBO, don't need act breaks, but on a network show, they are the most important part of the story pitch. Example. He says, two tickets for the Kim Kardashian Museum. And the guard says, I'm sorry, we're closed. There's been a murder. Bum, bum, bum. Act break. Callback. A joke that is repeated later in a show because it got a laugh earlier. This is a cheap, lazy trick that always seems to work, but we try to avoid them on The Simpsons. Here's an example. She says, I really enjoyed the Kim Kardashian Museum. He says, we can go back tomorrow. Like I said, it's always open. Laying pipe. This means providing exposition and character detail, preferably in a subtle way. For example, he says, let's go to that Kim Kardashian Museum. It's always open, even in the small New England town where I've come to get over my wife's unsolved disappearance that happened 20 years ago today. Joke on a joke. When you have a perfectly decent punchline, but add another joke to it. Some writers believe this ruins the original joke. Others believe it doubles the comedy. For example, an old man says, let's go to that Kim Kakamamie Museum. It's always open and anyone can get in. The Wacky Stack. This is also known as stacking the whack. Basically, this is a joke on a joke on a joke on a joke. It's the hope that by stringing funny words together, you will eventually strike comedy gold. You won't. Here's an example. The old man says, let's go to that Kim Kakamamie Museum. It's run by a stuttering Albanian on Dingle Street in Sheboygan. M.O.S. This is dialogue near the end of an episode where it suddenly switches from cheap jokes to unearned sentimentality. MOS stands for moment of shit. Here's an example. He says, "You know the sexiest thing in the Kim Kardashian Museum? You." And she goes, "Oh, honey." And they hug. Treacle cutter. After the moment of shit, a joke is tacked on to cut through the sweetness. For example, he says, "You know the sexiest thing in the Kim Kardashian Museum? You." She says, "Oh, honey." They hug. Then she says, "Your keys are poking me." And he says, "Those aren't keys." Comedy killer. A word or phrase so depressing, such as bone cancer or Armenian genocide, that it kills any joke it touches. For example, he says, "Let's go to the Kim Kardashian Museum. It's always open and anyone can get in unless they have full-blown AIDS." Nakamura. This is when a joke in the script bombs with an audience and the writer knows there are four more callbacks to that same joke. The term was coined by Gary Marshall after a running joke about a Mr. Nakamura went 0-for-6 with the studio audience. An example of this is ending an audiobook with a dozen Kim Kardashian jokes. Closing credits. Sam Simon was asked to leave The Simpsons in 1993. He went on to one of the most remarkable third acts in showbiz history. He directed 60 TV episodes. He made money as a tournament poker player. He managed boxer Lehman Brewster, taking him from an unknown to world heavyweight champion. He spent his Simpsons millions feeding LA's homeless, rescuing dogs, and fighting whaling. Once perceived as a prickly enfant terrible, he died as one of Hollywood's most beloved philanthropists. Sam is buried in Westwood Village Memorial Park, a compact cemetery stuffed with comedy legends. Billy Wilder, Fanny Bryce, Jack Lemmon, Walter Matthau, Carol O'Connor, Don Knotts, and me. I'll be interred about 50 feet from Sam. My cremation urn is already there, and the epitaph reads, "He made money being funny, loved his wife, a lovely life." Thanks for listening. This is Mike Reese. This production of Springfield Confidential, Jokes, Secrets, and Outright Lies from a Lifetime Writing for The Simpsons, was recorded and produced by John Marshall Media in New York City. It was directed by Zane Birdwell, engineered by Tony Van Horn, executive producer Katie Ostroka. Text copyright 2018 by Reese Entertainment, Inc. Production copyright 2018 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.